Morning, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order. It's 6 minutes after nine instead of 7 minutes after nine. That old clock. Thursday, February 12, 2009, Senator Hoffman will not be attending today's meeting. He's has other duties, other state duties. But the rest of the committee is intact. We have Senator Ellis, Senator Olson, Senator Elton, Senator Huggins, and Senator Thomas, and myself, Senator Stedman, here today. We're going to start the process that's going to, I expect, to consume vast amounts of Finance Committee's time over the next 2 months dealing with economic stimulus package, and DOT, Department of Transportation, being a large part of that's going to be front and center quite a bit. So this morning, we're going to start off with a presentation by the Department of Transportation on the federal stimulus program. I also understand that Congress came to an agreement in the conference committee last night, so DOT is going to try to give us the latest information, of which I think there's a printout on that, and the impact of the legislation dealing with Alaska. We'll be learning this morning the normal federal transportation program rules that have not been relaxed. So DOT is also going to talk about this, the state's going to have to do to get ready to receive the stimulus. It's kind of a combination, and I just recently met with a couple minutes ago with the Commissioner Von Schaben, and he's got some personal issues he's attending to and back home, so he will not be attending the meeting this morning. Mr. Jeff Otteson, I see, is here in the audience. Director of Program Development at DOT, will be doing a presentation along with Nancy Slagle, Director of Administrative Services. That'll help him field questions. And the normal attendee, Deputy Commissioner Frank Richards, is on his way back from Washington. So rather than wait till everybody can be rounded up, we're starting the process quickly. And I'd like to go ahead and ask Mr. Otteson to come forward along with Ms. Slagle, and they can go ahead and go through their presentation, and then we'll have some questions and talk a little bit about where we're going to go from here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Jeff Otteson, Director of Program Development with the Department of Transportation. That was a nice introduction. There has been change since our presentation was delivered yesterday afternoon. There's new numbers from the conference committee, and we'll go over those at that point in the presentation. But I'd like to start by pointing you to the email handout from Frank Richards sent very early this morning, I think as he was at the airport getting ready to fly home. Frank was representing the commissioner yesterday in Washington, D.C., at a meeting with Secretary LaHood of Transportation, U.S. DOT. And I've summarized in yellow some of the key points that he heard at that meeting. Secretary LaHood stressed that the number one goal of this bill is to create jobs. They want to create jobs, and they want to create them rapidly. But they also stressed there is no shortcutting of the rule book. The full weight of federal law, all the rules, NEPA, et cetera, apply to this process. So there's a bit of a disconnect if you think about that. We're going to go as quickly as possible, but we're not going to relax a single bit of red tape. So that really is our challenge. The other thing that I thought was interesting is all states were invited to submit one project to be a potential, to be recognized in this meeting. And Alaska's project on the Dalton Highway was one of three that was so recognized. So Frank got a chance to make individual comments to the group about the Dalton Highway project, its importance to gas pipeline, and was just one of three states so honored. So all of that information is there in your packet. I thought you might find that interesting. So moving to the presentation, this was, as I said, prepared just a few days ago and sent to you yesterday when we were still dealing with two versions of the bill, one in the House, one in the Senate, and they had some fairly significant differences. All of that changed late yesterday. Got a copy of the bill late last night and have been going through it. So I will be amending things orally as we go through that have changed in the, since this was delivered late yesterday. But we wanted to talk about the rules of the funding, how much funding we hope to receive, what we have taken as far as steps to be ready for the stimulus funding, and what steps are also needed, how we identified our list of projects, how much money is going to the two MPOs of Metropolitan Planning Organizations in Anchorage and Fairbanks as a matter of law, and what this impact of all this additional work is to the Department of Transportation. So, you know, why is this important? Well, I think we know. We now, too, have joined the long list of states that clearly have rising unemployment and problems with recession. I read last night in an article that while the unemployment rate nationally is about 7%, the unemployment rate among construction workers nationally is 19%. So it's much, much higher because of the downturn in things like housing construction, commercial construction, et cetera. This is also important in that these projects that get funded will reduce the backlog of highway aviation and transit, including ferry needs, that we have ready for funding. We have a lot of work that's queued up and ready for funding, but the basically the impacts to the federal program, including inflation and other factors, have really reduced just how much work we put on the street each year. That in turn helps us repair aging infrastructure, and it jumpstarts our ability to get the gas line infrastructure ready, as we talked to you last summer in the special sessions. So what are the rules of this program? As I've already indicated, there are very few rules that have been set aside in the stimulus program. The highway funds that we receive must follow the federal highway rule book, likewise for the transit funding, likewise for the aviation funding. They all will follow the normal federal rules that apply from those different administrations of USDOT. From the highway and transit side, that means the projects must be in an approved STIP. They must have been in a STIP that's undergone a public process of comment and ultimately approval by two federal agencies, Federal Transit and Federal Highways. That draft STIP hit the street yesterday, so it is out for public comment. There must be eligible for the funding category at work. We've had a lot of people come in and talk to us about schools, fire stations, power lines, things that clearly are not eligible for transportation funding. So there's a big disconnect in the public mind as to what stimulus might fund and what we're actually receiving, at least in the transportation part of the program. It must have begun as a federal project already. You'll see a slide later on that explains this, but it's with the federal process taking 2 to several years to get a project ready to go to bid, and with the deadlines of this program being now, as you'll hear, 6 months for the first deadline, you simply have to have a project already underway for it to be practical for this program. There's not enough time under the federal rules to start new projects that haven't already begun. So our universe of projects is really those projects that are already in the pipeline of project development and design. And then finally, in the House bill, and I've not had a chance now to find out whether it's in the final bill. This is one thing I couldn't get discovered this morning, is the House bill required that we give emphasis to economically distressed areas. And we'll describe that here in a slide or two. So as I said, the House bill talks about economically distressed areas. It did not set up any kind of a target, no mandatory set aside by percentage. It just simply said give emphasis. And a distressed area is defined in law as an area where the unemployment rate is at least 1% above the United States rate. And so right now there are just, the entire state is essentially economically distressed except for four or six boroughs. And the six boroughs are North Slope, Fairbanks, Anchorage, Juneau, Sitka, and Ketchikan. And you'll see here in the next slide, that's just simply based upon State Department of Labor statistics. So you see the six boroughs there with the boxes around them are the ones that are still not technically meeting that distress category. Another very important part of this bill, and this is the sword that cuts two ways, is Congress wants this money to be used quickly. In the House version, they wanted it to be funds obligated within 90 days of passage of the act. We've been working on the assumption that the act would pass by the middle of February so that we would have to obligate funds by the middle of May. That is a remarkably short timeline, particularly when you know that a STIP amendment, if it's done in its normal kind of methodical way, can take 90 days itself. So you simply had to have, you had to start pretty quickly and start early if we were going to make the deadline of May 15th to use half of this funding. That's one of the reasons the STIP has gone out as quickly as it has.
When you, if I could, when you talk about the STIP, are you talking about the Senate Transportation Implementation Plan? Or are you talking about some other definition of the acronym?
Mr. Chairman, we're talking about a STIP that would recognize the higher of the two bills as a funding level for a start. And we talked to Federal Highway Administration about this, and their advice was just that. You don't know what the final bill will be. You've got to be prepared for the higher of those two possibilities. So we wrote a STIP around the House funding expectation.
Mr. Otteson, I was just trying to poke a little fun at you. To get you to define what STIP means for the people at home that are
I'm sorry. The STIP is essentially a spending plan for federal highway and transportation funding. The acronym stands for Statewide Transportation Improvement Program. It's a federally required document that we have to prepare and amend periodically in order to use federal funds.
And that's the document we historically use at this table, working with DOT to allocate projects across the state with input from the communities on projects, and then DOT's ranking system for people at our home that are watching this.
That's absolutely correct, and I'm sorry for that. I sometimes drop into bureaucraties. The two MPOs are Metropolitan Planning Organizations in the state, and they are in Anchorage and Fairbanks, and they're known by their acronyms of AMATS and FMATS. They too receive sub-allocations of this funding to decide where those projects go, and they were under a 75-day deadline in the House bill. I do not believe this deadline now has been changed to 180 days for everybody in the new version from the conference committee. So it's no longer 90 days, it's no longer 75 days, it is now 180 days. But even under that somewhat relaxed schedule of 180 days, approximately the middle of August, the funds not used by any state will be up for grabs for other states. There will be a process of redistribution of funding not used. And that's a pretty typical process. This actually happens every year in the federal program. Every August, we go through a process of saying, how much funding do we expect to use? Could we use more? And historically, we've been a net recipient of that funding going back for decades. So this is not an unusual thing. I think under the 90-day rule, we expected that there could be an awful lot of money being redistributed, because we were aware that while most states are ready to go with their stimulus package, there clearly are some states that were not as ready to go, and we're likely to lose some of their funding. So from our standpoint, we're sort of sorry to see the 90 days go away, because 180 days is going to mean more states are likely to use their funding. There will be less money being redistributed as a result of use it or lose it. Another important thing to be aware of, and this creates a conundrum, I think, for all of us, is that there was language, at least in the House bill, that called for maintenance of effort. And it basically said that within 30 days of enactment of the bill, the governor of each state has to certify that the state will maintain state funding scheduled for highways, that you cannot supplant stimulus funds for state funds to transportation. Now, the way they set this up, the certification had to extend for 24 months, which happens to cover three state fiscal years. So you would be certifying for 09, for 10, and 11, all three. Now, you think about that, the 09 budget is written, the 09-10 budget is being written, but is not yet in final form, and the 11 budget has not even been put on paper. So That's a very difficult certification, you would think, for a governor to have to make in this state or any state that has the same basic problem here. And the way they set this up, if you can't make that certification, you will simply lose these funds entirely. They will be put back in the pool and go to other states.
Could you maybe elaborate a little bit more on the certification itself, and then Senator Huggins has a question? What is the certification? Mr. Otis?
I'm sorry.
What is the certification?
Well, it's essentially set up in law, Mr. Chairman, as a letter. There's not a lot of language in the bill. It's a very, very short section, but it basically says the governor shall certify. So we would expect that the USDOT would at some point come out with some firmer guidelines as to what that certification has to look like. But all of this is moving so rapidly, we don't have much detail right now.
And the certification certifying what the projects and that are going to be implemented, or the cash flow implementation, what is the certification?
It's essentially a certification that you won't stop transportation funding from other sources because you receive stimulus funds. You won't say, well, we have stimulus funds, we don't need to fund, you know, use our gas tax for this, perhaps we'll use the gas tax for something else. Now, it's difficult in our state. We don't have a dedicated fund. We don't have any certainty from year to year as to what transportation funding is going to be on the capital side. The only thing you can point to with certainty is a budget that's already been approved. It's even hard to imagine how the governor could certify to a budget that is proposed because it hasn't gone through the legislative give and take and been passed. I'm just pointing this out. This language is in the bill, and it does create a conundrum.
And then if I could just follow up, then we'll go to Senator Huggins. But there's an earlier version of the bill, and maybe the language has changed, that would allow the legislatures to certify it if the governor did not within a time frame. Or has that been changed out, or what's the status?
Mr. Chairman, I read that last night myself. I think it was designed for states where governors were unwilling to accept money. Apparently, the governor of South Carolina has shown great resistance to the stimulus bill, and I believe the language was inserted because of that. And so the legislature was going to be able to, under the way they set it up, to receive that funds and certify, even if the governor objected.
Now, is that in the final bill?
I believe that remained.
Okay, well, we can look into that further, clarify that. Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And you asked some of the questions I was going to ask, but there was also one other echelon, was local governments could also certify an A version. I'm not sure about whether that survived or not. It went from legislature then to local governments, as I recall, so there was another echelon. But be that as it may, Jeff, it looks to me like that you could interpret this, that the STIP that we have projected out over multiple years would essentially be frozen. Is that correct? I mean, it takes away flexibility to start moving projects around based on where they were projected to be in the STIP?
Well, through the chair, Senator Huggins, I think the certification is directly pointed at non-federal funding. It's pointed at state funding. It's basically saying the state should not stop funding with state resources because they received extra federal stimulus dollars. I think that's the essence of the certification.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, go ahead. Senator Thomas had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. just to make sure, and that was my understanding, that they were not going to allow you to take state projects, which would have made it simpler, ones that we have in the mill and were ready to be bid this year, and just say we're going to use the federal stimulus money for it. But I would think, just looking at 2010, which I realize is not practical, obviously, because of the time frame to do things, but I would think we would have a 2000, and this is depending on who you talk to, how many years it takes to get a federal project underway, you know, 5 to 7 years, people say it, compared to cities and state projects much quicker. So in that case, have you just simply then, are you stepping back 5-6 years and looking at projects that were in the mill? Have you gotten all your regional directors to just send you a list that these were projects that are federal projects that we were going to bid this year anyhow? Is that what we're doing?
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, it was the latter. We asked the regional directors, what can you deliver in the early timeline, picking the faster 90 days, and then what can you deliver in the later timeline? And the bills were also different on the second deadline. The House version gave you 18 months for the second half of the money to get it used, but the Senate version, and now the final version that has been adopted in conference, gives us only 12 months for the second half of the money, which is really just February of next year. So, you know, we kind of got a little time on the fast deadline, but we lost some time on the slow deadline under the new Senate version that's been adopted. So the universe of projects that we looked at was those projects that truly can be delivered in those timelines. And, you know, we had a lot of vetting of that. You know, we got a list and we started talking about, you know, the detailed issues that each project goes through. This permit, that permit, this right-of-way issue. You know, can we accelerate? Can we make these deadlines? And so the list got smaller as that vetting went along.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Huggins.
Yeah, Mr. Otteson just asked for your opinion. This makes me think back to the special sessions we had over the summer, and DOT was asking this body to allocate a significant amount of money to some projects that we declined on. And that, quite frankly, our declination appears to have some wisdom to it at this point in time, because otherwise they would not have been eligible for federal stimulus. How would you characterize that?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, that is probably correct.
Thank you.
Please continue.
To ready to proceed. So, this just gives you kind of a big sense. The bill, I think the final number last night became a little under $800 million. This was the numbers in the House bill. The $46 billion of that, or just roughly 5% for transportation, is still the right number out of the conference committee. And based upon the House bill, we thought we were going to receive about $500 million of that, that $46 billion. We now think it's going to be substantially less than that, probably less than, certainly less than 300 and maybe less than 200 overall in transportation funding to the state. And I'll talk about the details of that here in a moment. So I'd like to point you, though, these numbers on the slide show you how the House and Senate bills were organized before yesterday. There was a new handout, I think, given in your packet. It's just a black and white handout that has the highway and transit funding as the bill is now structured out of conference. This is based upon the Senate Amendment 570 to the House Resolution 1 that occurred yesterday. The highway and bridge funding to the state under that Senate formula that was adopted is about $132 million. There are defined set-asides for both Anchorage and Fairbanks of about $26 million. There's another set-aside for a category of funding called CMAQ, C-M-A-Q, for congestion mitigation air quality, about $6.5 million. This leaves for highway work for the state outside of those two MPO boundaries just about exactly $100 million as compared to what we thought would be about $187 million before, under the more beneficent House formula. The transit funding is about half of what we expected. And most significantly, the category of transit funding that was not included in the Senate version was a category that was eligible for ferry work. And we had a fair amount of ferry work identified, some money to go to the Ketchikan Airport ferry, some money to go to the new Alaska class ferry, a ferry terminal at Hoonah. All that type of money was simply not included in the bill as passed. So we're looking at about half as much money for highways as we hoped for under the House version, and about absolutely zero in terms of ferry money compared to what we had. If you look at aviation.
Dave, if we can just stop there, we have a question from Senator
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jeff, I mean, this is what the package looks like that was negotiated yesterday. I wonder what the restrictions are on the state. I mean, when you say money for ferries, has been eliminated in the bill. I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean that monies for ferries can't be part of the highway budget, does it?
Through the chair, Senator Elton, that is correct. The highway dollars are eligible by their by the way the federal highway funds work for ferries as well.
Okay. Thank you.
This was a particular class of funding that was really unique to ferries.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Please continue.
The other thing I wanted to point out is this use it or lose it rule. You can see in the Senate, the first half rule is now 6 months rather than 3 months. But the second half rule is 12 months rather than 18. If you just analyze that just for a minute, if we were to relax our pace and not deliver projects until July or August, as this rule would permit, none of this work would be on the street in 09. The contractors, by the time they receive their contracts, they buy their materials, they mobilize their equipment, it'll be September, if not October. And there will be no work done in 09. So if we want stimulus dollars to be spent this year and put Alaskans to work this summer, we need to continue to operate really on the 90-day schedule. That's the only schedule that will put work on the street this year. But what's odd about the Senate time frame is by accelerating the other one up to February of next year, they pretty much guaranteed that all the work would be done in 2010. If you play by those two deadlines. Because anything obligated in November, December, January to meet the second deadline wouldn't be built until summer of 2010 either. So it's, from Alaska's standpoint, these two deadlines were sort of nonsensical. And we believe that we need to, at least for half of the money, we need to move very quickly and continue as if the 90-day rule applies. Elsewise, we will not have work on the street this year.
Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jeff, I'm looking at the previous slide even to this one, but a couple back, and I see under transit AMAT share, but I don't see FMAT share. Is there a reason for that, or is it how did the Interior simply lose out on any transit-related funding?
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, yes, sir. That is my understanding right now. The two different MPOs. Are technically different. AMATS is an MPO above 200,000 population. They become a kind of a different animal under federal law. And the way the Senate bill was structured, it favored that type of MPO, those larger MPOs. And so I think FMATS will have to compete for transit money with that $8 million pot, which is available statewide.
So there was a.
There's no
the only category. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. So the only category that was actually funded in the bill was municipalities or whatever of 200,000 population or more. You're saying that's the
correct.
Could you quickly for the people at home define AMATS, the geographical boundary of the Anchorage metropolitan?
Yes, the AMATS geographical boundary is essentially the part of Anchorage that you would think of as urbanized, that is, has subdivisions and a road network. So it doesn't include Girdwood, it doesn't go much beyond Eagle River, it doesn't go up into the Chugach Range, even though all those areas are technically part of the Anchorage borough boundary or the municipality of Anchorage boundary. So it's a subset of Anchorage where you find subdivisions and a road network that's fairly dense.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead and continue.
Okay. So moving on to the aviation slide, the House bill would have had $3 billion for aviation. The Senate bill had $1.1 billion, and that $1.1 billion is the number that was adopted. It's a little more difficult for us to tell you how much we're going to get under aviation because the decision rests with FAA. We can tell you that historically, Alaska has garnered about 7.7% of the aviation pot, which would be roughly $85 million. But FAA has made it very clear to us that they will decide which projects and how much money, they've told us not to count any chickens before they hatch here. We have told them what our list is, how many projects that are eligible. that could be ready, both on the rule system and on the international system. But that's about all I can tell you, is that it's, I would say the maximum would be about $85 million, but that's certainly not a number that we can count on yet. So what has DOT done to be ready for stimulus? As I said, there's been a lot of encouragement from a lot of different quarters that we should get ready for stimulus. We should not be sitting on our laurels waiting for Congress to actually pass a bill, particularly with this conundrum of be ready to go very quickly, but none of the rules are being suspended. So we have been getting ready. We have been working literally almost every day of the week for about a month now to get ourselves ready. We've identified that universe of eligible projects that can meet the criteria that I talked about. We've prioritized that list using very simple criteria, but I'll talk about it in a minute. We've prepared a STIP amendment that reflects that list and published that just yesterday. That starts the public comment period, which will be over on 13 March of next month. We have authorized pre-work to get ourselves ready to take projects off the shelf that were put on the shelf because of lack of construction funding, to dust them off, to verify that their permits are ready. We have to make some amendments to projects. For example, we have to add language that requires that there be reporting by contractors, how many jobs are created, of what type, of what duration, and all that data has to be collected by the DOT and reported back to Congress. So we had to put that kind of language right into the contract requirements, and that's being done. We've been having bi-weekly meetings with staff to make sure that there aren't hiccups, to make sure that we're, you know, pulling the oars in unison, picking those projects. Staff are already dusting these projects off. Some of these projects on the stimulus list will go out to bid the day the bill is signed, because those are projects that are already in our STIP and already have legislative authority. But we wanted to make a point that we're ready to put people to work, and we're going to do it as quickly as we can humanly do it. And then finally, we've prepared a supplemental budget request for those projects that don't have legislative authority, and that'll be coming to you here in the next week or two. So on slide 13, further steps needed. Well, we do have to complete designs, permits, and other work on some of this fast list work. Not every project was absolutely bid ready, but there are a few things you have to do. And we're working on that now. We've got people authorized to start that work. We will take comment on the STIP amendment and then final that as quickly as possible. Both our federal partners, Federal Transit Administration, Federal Highway Administration, have told us they're prepared to review that in a much more rapid pace than is typical. A typical review would take 3 to 4 weeks before approval. I would be surprised if it takes more than 3 days. It's very clear that the federal agencies are on board with the urgency of this process. We have to be prepared to issue federal aid agreements, which essentially are contracts between the state and the federal government to use this funding. And it's those contracts, once signed, that actually guarantee that we have used the money. That becomes the triggering mechanism that says this money will not leave the state. So that's a very important step. And then to actually put this money on the street and make sure people are working, we need to go out and award contracts by advertising for bids, taking bids, and awarding to the low bidder. On the aviation side, we've done as much as we can, not knowing what the final list of projects is. We've advised FAA of what our eligible projects are. And I know yesterday, Frank Richards back had a chance to meet with Secretary LaHood specifically on the Accutane Airport, which is a very important airport because of what's happening in Accutane with the legacy aircraft now serving that community that's about to be made obsolete by EPA rules on leaded gasoline. And we had heard that FAA was not inclined to fund that project, and I think he had a chance to prevail upon the Secretary how important that is for the state and its economy out there. So just to give you an example of what we've been doing here.
Yeah,
So how were projects selected? How do we come down to this list of projects that you see in our map that we've published?
Mr. Chairman, before we go past that.
Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you. Jeff, the under further steps needed, the feds characterize how they have gone to Tiger Teams to make sure the money gets through. My question for you, internal to the state, DOT in particular, are we task organizing to make sure that we, in fact, can meet the timelines?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, absolutely. We talk about this like we're on a war footing. That's why we're having the biweekly meetings. We've even created a logo. You know, and logos sometimes are a PR gimmick, to be honest, but this logo is meant to be more than just PR. This logo is meant to be a communication device so that every stimulus project will have that logo on it, on the paperwork that accompanies it, so that when it hits the inbox of somebody deep in the organization of DOT, or for that matter, some other agency, maybe it's a federal agency issuing permits, they recognize this is a stimulus project. This is about, you know, resolving our nation's economic problem. We need to deal with it with due haste. So we recognize that was a problem. How do you communicate right down into the ranks which projects are stimulus and which are not? Because quite frankly, we have a lot more projects than just the stimulus list. The logo is meant to carry that message internally and externally.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Go ahead and continue.
So, talking about project selection, we had to know the rules. What was eligible? And I've gone over that. It's essentially the same federal rules that apply to our federal funding in the different administrations. We had to understand the rapid timing, and that particularly on the FAST list was a very limiting factor for project selection. A lot of projects are close to being ready, but being close to being ready and being ready are not always the same thing. We paid attention to the economic distress criteria, and in fact about 65% of our projects met that criterion. They were in areas that fall into the economic distress category. We had to understand the mandatory set-asides in law, the fact that AMATs and FMATs would be receiving some of the funding as a matter of law, and that the decisions there would be theirs, and that the rules that apply, the STIP rules, the NEPA rules, et cetera, would not be waived in any way. So, you know, if you take a project, just to pick one that's still undergoing a NEPA document, you take the Kubota project, for example. Still an active NEPA document. It's not near its record of decision, so it could not even be considered as a potential stimulus project. That came up with a small list of eligible projects that met this criteria, that had all the right circumstances, and we decided we really need to focus on that list. That's the list where we need to put our attention. That's the ones we need to dust off. Because if we try to do everything, we try to get everything ready sort of equally, we don't have any new staff being added to this effort, we would simply not be ready to use this money and not let it go through our fingers.
Senator Elton.
Thank you. And just if a little bit more discussion, it can be brief, on how the projects were selected and knowing the rules. And a focus on, you know, a discussion of the economic distress criteria and how, I mean, how you factored in other concerns, regional concerns, making sure that we weren't stimulating just one part of the state, but all parts of the state. If you could just expand a little bit on that specific criteria.
Through the chair, Senator Elton, we ended up with a list, both the universe, if you would, that's a little more than $350 million. And at the time, we thought the maximum amount of money coming to us was about 240. So it wasn't a huge gap between expect possible resources and total list. It wasn't like sometimes where we're dealing with lists that are in the multiple billions of dollars of deliverable projects, if you think, you know, if you aren't worried about a fast timeline. So we kind of looked at NHS, we looked at bridges. We looked for a mix of local government projects and state projects because the bill calls for that. It calls for a sharing. You know, we for example, there were two bridges in your district that had been lacking for funds for a long time, but they were underway. They're in their NEPA process, and the designs are almost done. So we said, there's a chance to get those bridges done. And it's and so it went on to our list.
If
there were very few projects that didn't make it, and I want to make a key point here, is the projects that didn't make it will be the ones that are standing in line first for the next step for O10. It's very likely the projects that didn't make our universe of stimulus will be in the STIP, if not in 10, then in 11. So this is a rising tide that really lifts all boats and moves all projects up in order of priority.
If I could just, and perhaps it's appropriate to use the two bridge projects in Juneau that you mentioned. I mean, and that, I guess that's that gets to the question. I mean, how did you do that? I mean, you previously showed a slide that had yellow blocks on non-economically distressed regions of the state. Juneau was one of the yellow blocks. So how do you balance the two Juneau projects against the criteria here that mandates or that suggests the rules are you have to use an economic distress criteria? And just to keep it from being too broad a question, how did you make a decision to add two bridges from Juneau? It's safer to talk about my projects and somebody else's perhaps. How did you make a decision that those two projects should be part of the list given given criteria number three on the rules?
Well, through the chair, Senator Elton, we read the economic distress criteria very carefully, and we looked for is this rigid? Does this have some percentage requirement? And it didn't. It said give emphasis. And we felt like when we looked at our list and our distribution and we sort of ended up adding it up, we said, we hit two-thirds of the list is in economically distressed areas. Now, part of that one-third is mandatory set-asides to Fairbanks and Anchorage, which aren't economically distressed. So, if you think about where we had discretion, we probably hit better than two-thirds. We hit closer to 75% of discretion. But we didn't believe that it meant we had to ignore communities like Juneau and Sitka and Ketchikan. We just had to make sure the list overall is treating the entire state. And I think if you look at our distribution of projects, we did a pretty good job of spreading this money around. We really were trying to find a geographic spread to the list of work, at least under the House-funded version.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
If we could, Mr. Otteson, just for a little clarity on the when DOT redoes the STIP, what input do you have, or does the legislature have in helping you craft the STIP?
Mr. Chairman, that's a good question. I think in a normal give and take process where you're developing a STIP months ahead of even a capital budget being prepared, in a much more deliberate process, I think the process is we often get letters from legislators on those draft STIPs. We pay attention to them. We've been known to change things as we go out. But as I have pointed, we are flying. We are marching to this deadline imposed upon us by the rules in this bill that says go quickly, get these jobs on the street now. So we, to be honest, we put that list out there. There is a 30-day comment period. We would ask for your comments, but we'd also ask that you recognize that if we change too many projects, if we slip too many and take the ones we've been working on, because we are working on those projects to get them ready, and substitute with other projects, these dollars will leave the state. That's the sad fact of it all.
And then on your implementation, you made a comment that once the bill is signed and finalized, DOT can respond. Got the impression like within 24 hours and you are underway on this process. So you don't need any legislative authority to implement this, or how I'm still trying to.
Mr. Chairman, the projects that will be going out promptly after the bill is signed are projects that we have already received legislative authority for. I'll just give you one example that I know well. and that's the Gustavus Dock. We have a whole rainbow of money in it. We have a couple different categories of National Park Service money. We have an earmark from Congress, and then we have some state discretionary funds, federal discretionary funds, STIP funds, in other words. Some of that National Park Service money has to be used before March, or we lose it entirely. It'll just go to another state. So what stimulus gave us was just that last little bit of money to make that project whole, because we didn't have, it wasn't whole up until the stimulus dollars came along. If we don't put it out to bid, and we do have authority, we will lose the National Park Service money, and then we will have to come up with more money on the state side to make the project successful. So it was an example of a project where stimulus is basically bringing it up to full funding, which only then can we go out to bid. But we do have legislative authority. It was already in the STIP, and this information from the National Park Service, this extra money, just came to us last month in January. So it's kind of a coalescence of factors that came together.
I've got a quick follow-up question, and I'll get to you, Senator Elton. There was a request that went out to the communities to update their STIP list, and then there was reference that the current list is over 13 years old and needs to be refreshed. So can you enlighten us a little bit on why there's a 13-year comment in that?
If I may, Mr. Chairman, I've got a slide that talks about that whole issue.
Well, we can, okay, we'll deal with that when we get there so we don't get out of sequence. Senator Elton.
Thank you. And Jeff, just a process mechanical question. I mean, I appreciate your admonition that, in fact, because of the tight timelines, it is difficult, and the suggestion that we don't want to do too much fooling around with the list. One of the frustrations that I've felt, though, and maybe it's for no reason at all, is that we know what lists, we know what you selected off the list that were shovel-ready and are your suggestions, but it would be helpful for us as appropriators to know to have a list of what's shovel-ready that didn't make your list, so that as we as appropriators, you know, have an idea of what the whole realm of possibilities may be, not just your suggested list.
And if I could just, before you answer that, just wrap in a conversation I had with the commissioner right before the meeting, that the committee will be asking DOT for that list in spreadsheet format, so we could see what the projects were before these modifications, what modifications are requested, and then what it looks like afterwards, much like how we deal with the budget, where we look at the current and then the proposed changes and then the after effect.
Mr. Chair, that means that Mr. Otteson probably doesn't need to answer the question then. I would just hope that list comes quickly, because I mean the challenge that the department faces, the challenge that we face as appropriators, is that without that information, it's going to be difficult for us to do our job. So the faster it gets to us, the better off we are. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And the difficulty of not having it in a spreadsheet format is when we deal with hundreds of pages of paper, it's very difficult, if not virtually impossible, with our other workload to get wade through the information. Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one short question on the economically distressed areas. I see the map, and I also see the Department of Labor unemployment data, but it indicates that it's not seasonally adjusted, and some areas of the state are dramatically impacted seasonally by unemployment. And there's most of those that are listed as not being economically disadvantaged or economically distressed areas are within one percentage point of qualifying. Do you intend to take a look at this in the future as far as, you know, the second round of projects and adjust it something that might be more close to reality as we look into the future, or even relook now at this point in time and say, geez, was that a fair way to analyze the state in general?
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, Our dilemma is with the 12-month deadline on the second timeframe, we'll have to have legislative authority this year. We won't, cannot wait to next year's session to do that. And that means we pretty much have to have that list hammered down. Mm-hmm. We also have to have people working on the right set of projects to make those deadlines. So there really isn't time to back up and look at what would be, say, late, you know, next summer's unemployment rate to see if it's changed dramatically. I think what you're going to see is, you know, especially now with the Senate number being so much less in dollars, this list is going to shrink. There's just no way around that. And we actually have enough work. We could have the entire number now, the entire $100 million on the street this summer.
If I may, I wouldn't suggest that we do any future estimates. I'm just suggesting that depending on what the definition of the not seasonally adjusted is, that we take a look at what the reality was in at the end of 2008, say December's figures or January's figures, as current as somebody could have, which should be relatively easy to acquire due to the people applying for unemployment and all the other factors that are involved in determining that number.
Be happy to look at that.
Thank you.
If we could just stop there for a minute, I just want to pick up where Senator Elton left off. There was a question on a couple of bridges, but there's a issue of ferry replacement with Bob Ellis Ferry that we had funded here at the table a couple of years ago in anticipation of a delay in getting the Gravina access constructed, the hard link constructed. And with the removal of the conference committee solution on the bill, is there still going to be replacement monies in there for that ferry? Because we are on a January 2010 deadline with the Coast Guard for certification of that existing vessel.
Mr. Chairman, I'm aware of the deadline. I'm aware of the urgency of that ferry replacement as Ketchikan's link to the airport. And I think that we will give that all due consideration as we now adjust this list of projects as a result of the action last night. It will probably have to come and be funded out of the highway side of this program because that ferry going, the old ferry going offline and no replacement ferry to replace it is simply unacceptable from my understanding of the situation.
I quickly saw a swiveling neck from my colleague in Juneau. He must have been thinking two bridges for Juneau going to one bridge and Ketchikan gets a ferry so we all get to work our airport. But I'm not sure I'll ask Senator Elton to go ahead and ask his own question, but it didn't go unnoticed.
You, normally, your intuition is great. In this case, it didn't swivel for that reason. But the discussion leads to, you know, a question that perhaps the spreadsheet that is coming quickly will address. And that is, I'm not going to name the project because I'm not willing, I guess, to suggest, you know, that you revisit this project and take it off the list, given the tightening or the monetary constraints in the new package. But it puzzles me in some ways because I'm thinking of a project that has been called shovel ready, that has never gotten any bond money, never gotten any GF dollars. And so I wonder how projects like that become shovel-ready, designed, engineered, potentially through a permit process. How all of that happens when there have been no GF or bond dollars available to work on the project.
Through the chair, Senator Elton, many of our projects get funded for design and their environmental work through the federal program. They show up on the STIP as a design start. That authorizes the design money, and I would say the majority of projects in our program year to year, that's the mechanism.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
If I can just speak to the list of projects that you haven't seen that are in the universe, it's a very short list. It's five or six at most. It's not a big, big, long list. It's below the line right now.
Is Gravina Access on that list? I know a couple of years ago there the issue that the administration had was the lack of funding for that particular project, not at $400 million, but the $250 million target that we were working with the Southeast Director on, so.
Mr. Chairman, Gravina Access is undergoing a fresh environmental effort, the reevaluation in the environmental impact statement, and we don't expect a ROD until next summer, which is now 6 months after the second deadline. So it's just one of those examples of a project that the NEPA process is so much longer a timeline than the deadlines and the stimulus funding that it can't be considered.
Please continue. We understand the political speak.
Yeah, and this next slide, I think, sort of makes that point. The federal timeline is 7+ years. You know, not all projects are this long. Some are 1 or 2, but most are 3 or 4 or 5. And we had to pick projects that were very close to that brown line, that had gone through that long, arduous process. That's our universe of eligible projects for this funding. And that's what we're trying to focus on, because I think anything less than that, if we start focusing on projects, well, maybe we might get them ready. Maybe we can rush this thing. One, we tax our staff, and two, if we fail, we see the money go to another state. It's just not an outcome we want. So I talked earlier about criteria that we use internally to prioritize, and they are, one, there are mandatory set-asides. We just simply had to pay attention to those. The law requires it. Two, the governor had announced early on in the stimulus discussions that several gas line readiness projects were high priority for the state. So they were given priority. We then looked at safety. We looked at whether projects hit economic distress criterion, whether a project was leveraging other dollars, particularly other dollars that might be lost. And then whether the project could create jobs this summer, actually put people to work in 2009. And the more of these points that a project hit, the more likely it was to be on our list. So we were pretty true to these. We didn't use scoring. We just used each one checking the box. Either it does or it does not meet that particular factor. And again, FAA is the decider for aviation funding, so we had no system for theirs.
Mr. Chair, I'm Nancy Slagle, Director of Administrative Services for Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, and I just want to mention on the aviation side, you may be thinking that FAA is the one that's doing all of the work on those airport projects. In fact, we have provided a list of projects to FAA and have been working with them on an ongoing basis regarding those airport projects. They have come back with their list, which is not exactly the same as ours. And the regions have been reviewing those projects to assure that they too can go forward in the time frames that are being required of us. So it is just so you know that there is a connection between us and FAA on those projects.
Senator Elton.
Thank you, and I appreciate the point. It brings up a question. I mean, we're talking about state airports. I mean, there are community airports that have shovel-ready projects also, and how do you deal with those projects so that they would have access to dollars also?
Through the chair, Senator Elton. As I stated, that you're correct. Those are state-owned airports, and that's why we've been working fairly closely with FAA and looking at those to make sure that they have our list, which says these are the things that we think that are important and that we need to go forward with. FAA certainly has their viewpoint in making sure that the safety is their top priority, and that where they believe that those discretionary funds basically are going to be directed. And in the most part, this is on the airport side, there are considered discretionary funds that are being, so it's not the normal entitlement program that would be available. So it's the give and take back and forth, the continual discussion that our Deputy Commissioner Christine Klein has been having with FAA on that list of projects that they've identified.
If I could just follow up, Mr. Chair, I mean, I was trying to listen to the answer, Nancy, and does this mean that I need to get in touch with, for example, the folks in Juneau to talk about what projects they may have that would be eligible for stimulus dollars, or is that something that has already been handled by FAA or by the state? To make them part of the discussion mix, am I responsible for getting in touch with my airport folks?
Through the chair, Senator Elton, the Juneau Airport is not a state-owned airport,
right.
So it would not be part of this as far as I understand it, and I might have that wrong concerning sponsorship of the airports. And so I don't believe that that's part, and that would have, and I'm not in totally knowledgeable of how they're dealing with those non-state airports. So we can certainly get back to you on that particular
issue. That would be helpful. And if the answer is bad, I mean, I'd just suggest we would consider selling our airport to you for a dollar so that we could be part of the discussion.
Yeah. If I can just amplify that answer a little bit, Mr. Chairman, Senator Elton. The FAA nationally is used to dealing with airport owners typically at the city and county level. So they're used to dealing with a lot of different airport operators within a given state. It's sort of unusual to be dealing with a DOT like ourselves, which is sort of the dominant airport owner, or almost, you know, the majority airport owner. It's an unusual relationship. In fact, we're the largest airport owner in the country, just to give you some, you know, statistic. And so FAA still maintains lines of communication directly to those independent airports in the state like Juneau, and they will advocate back and forth sort of in parallel to what we do.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So you're telling me that airports like Merrill Field have got to fight their own battles and don't have any state assistance with this?
Senator Olson, through the chair, we do participate in part of the match for those type of airports, but they are essentially, they kind of like their independence, to be honest, but yes, they...
I understand that, but as you look at the stimulus package, and obviously it's going to be money out there, and I'm sure that the airport manager there at Merrill Field or out here in Juneau would like to go ahead and has projects out there to try and make sure he can keep up with some of the federal regulations that are starting to increase as we look at security and those other things. And I'm just trying to figure out, is the state willing to go ahead and assist those smaller airports or community-owned airports that aren't on the state list that has been submitted?
We can get back to you to that, but my own experience tells me that they've got a pretty well-worn path to FAA already. They're not bashful about it. Speaking to their needs. That's just my understanding of the situation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Can we back up to one slide? Slide 16.
I'm sorry.
I'm just curious on the, just looking at the slide here, the ranking. Why isn't safety number one and economic distress number two or number three? Or
well, Mr. Chairman, I mean, the mandatory set-asides is sort of number one because it's in law. There's nothing we can do about it. It's a given. And then the governor had made an announcement, and we felt that was the priority. We need to get ready for gas line, as we said last summer. If we wait to put all this gas line work in just two or three years, they're at the back end of our window of opportunity. We will really be in a difficult place in terms of contractor capacity, engineering capacity, et cetera, and just impact to the traveling public. It's too much work to do on those roads over such a short window. So, but safety's right up there. And when we say safety, we're really talking about, you know, almost every highway project can be considered to have some safety element, but we were looking for projects that had a very strong safety component. Replacement of a defective bridge, replacement of a bad intersection with a new intersection design, projects of that ilk. So I think it's above economic distress, it's above these other criteria. We felt safety is important.
But there, my understanding is there is no assurance that we're going to have a gas line under construction. We don't even have a project yet, that's my understanding. And there's concern at this table that we take care of all of the state's needs along with getting ready for a potential gas line.
Well, Mr. Chairman, most of the gas line work that we've identified, two of the projects that are now in stimulus are on the Dalton Highway. So they're important to the state's current oil production as well as future gas production. There's no doubt that those are important, as well as future oil production that we hope to occur up there. That really is, where we all get our meal ticket, so to speak. The other gas line project that's on the governor's list is the Parks Highway between Willow and Cashwitna. It's an aging piece of the Parks Highway. Its subgrade has had distress over the years from settlement, freeze-thaw settlement. There's no passing lanes, yet there's a high volume of both truck traffic and, in the summertime, recreational vehicle-type traffic, boat traders, etc. So that's a widening, a straightening, an improvement of that road, new shoulders, and seven different passing lane sections.
Yeah, I didn't mean to digress the conversation into the particular projects. It was just a concern on the list that's been expressed here at the table that we take care of the entire state along with keeping an eye on this gas line, which we all want to move forward and get to construction, but we're not quite there yet. Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jeff, we haven't heard anything about railroads. And I understand the state task organization when it comes to DOT vice railroads, but somebody has to be the systems integrator to the railroad piece because, I mean, it's in fact a road that just runs on steel wheels. We've talked about air, we've talked about ferries, water, we've talked about resurfacing highways and everything that goes along with that and bridges. We haven't talked about railroad. Where does the systems integration come to play there? Or is DOT doing it, or is somebody else doing it, or is it going undone?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, historically our money, the federal highway money, has not been eligible for railroad, with a few exceptions, like the rail crossings themselves, of highway rail crossings. The railroad has been a net recipient of a great deal of federal transit money that has helped the railroad, and in part because they got to change the law that makes the way the money works. It's supposed to be spent in urban areas, but they're allowed to spend that railroad money they receive outside the state. Under the House version of the bill, they were to receive $32 million for stimulus work. I don't know right now. I didn't get a chance to research that. How the railroad has fared in the Senate version of the bill that passed?
Well, no, understand. I guess I'm more interested in the operational part of it because bullet number two says readiness, announce projects, and we're talking about transportation system for the pipeline, and some of us hope that the railroad takes on a major piece of that burden. So, by virtue of forget about the money for a moment, but the systems part of how we move things, heavy things. Logistically is important to us.
Yes.
And if we're going to use that rationale for highways, why we wouldn't have the integration of the railroad so they could use the same rationale as it's a priority to build the pipeline? So my question is, who's doing the systems integration?
Senator Huggins, through the chair, we have been sitting down with the railroad both last fall and then earlier this year in January to identify a list of projects that we wanted to talk about, quite frankly, jointly, as important to the state, not only for gas pipeline, but really for several other resource development opportunities as well. Quite frankly, the rush to get stimulus ready has kind of taken the wind out of the sails of that effort. But there was a meeting held with the railroad board, or the railroad staff, and our staff, early January. And there have been some maps prepared of a joint sort of systems analysis. So it's just time has not been there to kind of finish the product.
Yeah, no, understand. I guess, number one, Mr. Chairman, I would encourage us to get the railroad to come. But more importantly, no matter what we do on our roads, if we don't adequately have a robust railroad capability, we will destroy the roads if we haul heavy stuff on them over time. So this is just a Band-Aid, for lack of a better term, if we don't make mandatory use of the railroads and their robust capability and enhance them. So anyway, I thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead and continue.
I think we understand.
Yep.
Thank you.
And we have a little less than 45 minutes or so, Mr. Otteson, and about a dozen or so slides. So go ahead and
think
about that as you pace through. But I'll queue you up about 10 minutes before we're done to sum up there.
Okay, I'm on slide 17, talking about the set-asides to Fairbanks and Anchorage. Both of these are known as metropolitan planning organizations. That's a federal term. Their local acronyms are AMETs and FMETs for Anchorage and Fairbanks, Metropolitan Area Transportation Systems, I believe is their acronym. They are the deciders of projects within their boundary under federal law. They generally, the same rules are applying to them. They have to put their projects in a TIP, a Transportation Improvement Program, which is a list of projects, just like the state's TIP is, a statewide list. They are doing that work right now to get their list ready. They too have to focus on those that are bid ready through the NEPA process. And under the House bill, the two MPOs were going to garner about $73 million. It is less now under the final bill. I don't have that new number for you, but it's if you just add up the numbers on the slides, you can see it. I think it's much closer to about $40 million, all things considered. So, you know, we get asked a lot, even why we were looking to just our existing projects. Why are we only looking to those ones in our pipeline? And I've kind of gone over this, but the congressional rules didn't give us any choice. We had to look. They didn't suspend the rules. They had to be federally eligible and federally started. And they had to meet the eligibility rules. And so that really became the boundaries of that universe, what was already in the mill, what was already underway in a federally federally approved design process. They actually approve every step of the way. So, this now is an obsolete slide, 19. This is what we would have gotten done if we'd gotten the House version of the funding. We had a significant volume of highway work, many, many bridges, two new ferries. I'm sorry to say a lot of this now will not be fundable under the Senate version. So,
Mr. Otteson, if you could stop there for a minute. One of the things we haven't talked about is integration between the FY10 capital budget that's in draft form or original submission, however you want to, recommendations from the administration. And how did you integrate the FY10 capital budget as submitted by the governor to us on December 15th with your stimulus package, and then do you plan on modifying the FY10 capital budget to try to accomplish some of these other goals?
Yeah, yes, Mr. Chairman, we are looking at what we submitted under the in the FY10 capital budget. We will be submitting amendments to that capital budget to remove items, specific projects that will be included in the economic stimulus package supplemental bill that will be coming to you. So we have done some shifting of things that we have identified that can be done sooner, and they will be incorporated into that appropriation bill and adjustments to the FY10.
Yeah, I understand the overlap, and we pull out the projects in the FY10. Dalton Highway is one. You know, pull that project out because it'll go forward under economic stimulus. But the question wasn't really what are you going to cancel, but what are you potentially going to add to facilitate these overall objectives that you were trying to accomplish under the House version.
And Mr. Chairman, you're absolutely correct. There will be projects that as we complete the work on the STIP for those projects that Jeff had mentioned would be moving up into the FY10 program, and those would have to be added if we do not have existing authority for them.
Okay. Because we're going to, at this table, we're planning on looking at both the stimulus and the FY10 capital budget, so we get a picture of what we're doing over the next 18 months or 24 months.
Mr. Chairman, I think one comment is that now that we have firm numbers and we've been dealing with, you know, a wide range of possible funding until yesterday, it'll be a little bit easier for us to give you a firmer list. So.
Yeah, I understand that. Senator Elton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you don't need to answer this at the table because it is a very complex issue, but it is something that I think the committee needs to hear about and have discussed, or perhaps you can respond in writing, or somebody from the department can respond in writing. When you talk about integrating lists and projects and, you know, FMATs and AMATs and state projects, could you give us at some point, you know, some kind of an indication on how you're dealing with Indian Reservation Road funds? And how that fits into kind of this building block of projects that we'll be doing, because I anticipate that those specifically designated dollars can be used as part of the stimulus package, but how you deal with the different entities that get to earmark those funds is a question that needs to be answered, and I think probably needs to be answered as we discuss how we're dealing with the other dollars also. Thank you, Mr.
Chair. Yeah, it's a pretty complex topic, and it's very, very voluminous. There's a lot of issues there. There is about $40 million a year in Indian Reservation Road money now coming to tribes in the state, and there'll be about that much money coming under stimulus as well. But I would bog this meeting down if I got into it right now.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Go ahead and continue.
So people were also asking us, could we add new projects to the slow list, that second deadline, and still make the due date? And even under the more relaxed deadline of about 18 months, the simple answer was no, because federal projects take such a long amount of time. But now that the slow deadline is just 12 months, it's a definite, it's even a firmer no. We must have capital budget authority this year in order to do those projects, so we have to identify them now, and we have to start working on them now. And they too have to be projects that are in our pipeline, although they can be a little bit, they can have a few months worth of work left on them. They don't have to be bid ready to make the slow list. Just to give you some sense, although I do think now with this smaller number, we are probably capable of delivering the entire amount of stimulus funds this year as essentially as a fast list. So this is the one point I really want to drive home, is that this stimulus list is moving all other projects forward in line. They're all benefiting, even the ones that don't make the stimulus list will make a STIP year that much faster. And I think that's the, if I can give you one takeaway message about, you know, the universe of projects, what didn't make it. Right now, the universe of projects that didn't make it are the ones that'll be going into the new STIP that we write here starting for 2010, that I'll talk about in a minute. We also had a lot of communities that just simply wanted to add projects, their projects, projects that they've been doing on their own, maybe with state money, maybe with local money. But those projects, if they haven't started in a federal way, would never be able to back up and do all the federal steps. The federal rule book is very demanding. It does not allow you to pick up a project in midstream and just continue with it as a federal project. You have to back up and do a NEPA process. Verify that you haven't picked an alternative, you know, kind of without going through the true NEPA process of picking alternatives and evaluating them, etc. So it wasn't possible to add those new projects from outside that had already started. And then finally, this idea that we would just hand a check out to communities, sub-allocate funds and say, you know, have fun, get underway and go do your project. The federal highway program in particular is very, very accountable, very full of checks and balances on the state at every step along the way that we follow the rules. And what we've found over the years is that when communities try to do these projects, they're so used to going at it with state funds or local funds that don't follow these rules, they make a mistake. And those mistakes can be very costly, because if you make a mistake on the first day, all the work you do downstream of that day becomes ineligible for federal funds. So there's no reimbursement. You don't, the community doesn't get federal funds to pay for the work. The cases where we are successful doing local projects with local governments is where we do them as a joint effort. And there's a DOT project manager that stays on board the entire way. So this is the question you raised, Mr. Chairman, about why are there two STIPs underway? Well, the 2009 year of the current STIP must be amended to make room for stimulus projects, to add the new funding and to add the new projects that stimulus makes possible. That draft amendment is on the street right now. A new STIP for the 2010 to 2013 timeframe is also out for public comment and public nomination. And what we've asked there is, we looked at our needs list, which is this big database of projects that has been nominated over the years and scored over the years. And we basically said, you know, it's been 13 years since we've kind of refreshed this list. We don't know whether some of these projects have been funded in another way, maybe a state grant, maybe they found money just at the local level. We don't know if it's even that community's high priority anymore. A lot of these projects may not be a high priority. And then finally, to be honest, we use the scoring system, but we've actually done a mathematical analysis, and you've heard of the term grade creep, you know, where the universities are passing out grades that are ever higher as an average. Well, we've had score creep. We've noted that the average score of projects from year to year to year has crept up. So anything that's been scored back 3 or 4 years ago is sort of going to be a perpetual loser in the process unless it gets a chance to be rescored. So we're asking everybody to tell us, what is your current priorities? We'll start that list with a fresh do-over, because it needs to be a do-over. And let me make this clear. Any project that's already underway isn't going to be re-evaluated. If a project started in our system being designed, those projects, for lots of valid reasons, have to continue. The most valid reason of all is, once we start a federal project, we're on the hook to either get it done or pay back the federal funds. So the last thing you want to do is start a federal project and then stop it and be obligated to pay back the cost of that design and other work.
There's only one of those type projects of any magnitude that I'm aware of, and that's Gravina Access.
Gravina Access, if we got that message that we had to pay it back, would be as much as $50 million, Mr. Chairman.
Right. And we'll talk about that in private another time so we don't digress this meeting into other topics, but the scoring system, can you explain to the committee who actually sits down and does a score? I mean, is it the Commissioner of DOT and his top guys of each region of the state, or who actually sits in the room and makes that call?
I can answer that question, Mr. Chairman. It, by our regulations, there are six people that sit on the project evaluation board. They are the three regional directors, and then from headquarters, the deputy commissioner of highways, Frank Richards, the chief engineer, Roger Healy, and the planning director, and now program development director, myself. And I can tell you that is a long, arduous slog. A typical project can sometimes take 30 or 40 minutes of presentation and scoring time. And we will be looking at scoring perhaps 100 or more projects come up. We'll spend 3 days with bad coffee and going through the process. It's open to the public. It is a very, very, I would say, it's a very interesting process. The regions are strong advocates of their projects. They develop very, very powerful presentations about each project. They advocate for them. They have maps, they have charts, they have narrative. And we go through criteria that have now gone through several years of revision. You know, it's really easy to look at our criteria and feel like we're somehow, I don't know, not doing it the right way. But when others look at the criteria that we use, we were recently evaluated by a, as how all the states do their STIPs, and Alaska was given gold stars for its method, for having a very, very open and transparent process with a criteria that makes sense. So, you know, I'm somewhat defensive of our criteria because when others look at it, they give us good marks. The Denali Commission, when they set up their scoring system, Mike McKinnon came from DOT and he told me, he said, you know, the grass is always greener on the other side. I always kind of figured the Alaska system would, there must be a better system out there. The Denali Commission hired a consultant and went out and looked at criteria for scoring projects and ended up with a system that is almost identical to our own. So we use the system. We try to give big communities and small communities a fair shake. There are some emphasis areas. For example, in the rural area, we have a strong emphasis towards sanitation roads. We feel like that's something the state's got to be doing until the job gets done. So, you know, if they ask for another type of road, it probably doesn't score very well in rural Alaska. But if they ask for a sanitation road, it scores very high in our criteria. And in urban areas, it's the job, it's the roads that really make the economy go. It's major collectors and above. It's where businesses are, and it's where the higher volumes of traffic are.
Senator Elton.
Thank you, and I appreciate that, and I applaud the process that you have applied to the projects. But what kind of makes me bristle a little bit in the presentation has been, and I'm going to, I don't know, my packet doesn't have a number on the slides, but there is a slide here that says adding other projects. And here's what it says. It's understood communities want other projects considered, but the rules are tight and fixed in law. Success means we focus limited resources on what can proceed. And time and resources diverted will harm the outcome. And the reason I bristle a little bit is because there seems to be a suggestion here that your process, as good as it is, is somehow better than the process the local communities go through as they identify shovel-ready projects that may be eligible for the work. And I guess I would just suggest that I'm not sure I buy into that. I'm especially not sure that I buy into that with the previous slide where you talk about the Fairbanks and Anchorage AMATS, FMATS program. I mean, what you're saying is communities can't do it, and then you're saying that Fairbanks and Anchorage can do it and are going to be bound by the same rules that apply to the projects that you're selecting. I would just suggest that when it comes to shovel-ready projects, I mean, there are people in communities that have already got designed and in communities outside FMATS and AMATS that have shovel-ready projects that can be part of a stimulus package. But so I bristle a little bit about this slide, adding other projects, a suggestion that we ought not consider other community projects that are shovel-ready, because it will divert time and attention. And I think the professionals in those communities are every bit as professional as the people that are working for AMATS or FMATS or working for the department. So I appreciate the comments about your process. But I did feel I had to get that off my chest because I'm uncomfortable with a notion or a suggestion that we only stick with your list. When there are other projects out there that fulfill every mandate in the stimulus package and have been vetted at a local level, and I would suggest some of them may even be able to be on the street before yours are. Thank you for letting me vent.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Elton, I think that the one distinction is that the FMATS and AMATS process, they know they're working with federal money. Last year they were working with federal money, the year before that. The projects in their hopper are working through the Federal Highway Administration. They're being reviewed through all those rules that I talked about in the federal rule book for every one of their projects, which makes them eligible today for stimulus money. No matter how good a non-MPO city is, a typical, say, a Juneau or a Ketchikan or a Kodiak or you know, name the community that's not an MPO. They are typically using local money or state money, and the last thing they want to do is do a federal process. So just by that very fact, those projects can't be made eligible. We just don't have time to back them up. It doesn't matter how good they are, how well vetted they are. That's not the point I'm trying to make. The point is, we can't grab that project, back up 2 years, and get it ready under this federal rule book that I'm talking about. That's the distinction. Stimulus money comes as federal streams, and they've been doing their projects without federal streams. So it's not a matter of good projects, bad projects. Our system's better. We just have projects that have gone through the federal process because that's what we do.
And I may be inferring too much from the comment then, but it goes back to the discussion we had about locally owned airports. Does that same logic apply there? And so therefore are communities that don't have an FMATS or an AMATS or don't have state airports, I mean, does it apply across the board? Because if so, it seems to me that one of the things that happens with this federal stimulus plan is that there are some communities that are so disadvantaged they're going to be locked out of participation.
Well, Senator Elton, through the chair, the airports typically are working with FAA, whether they're state-owned or the locally-owned. They already have a relationship with that federal agency. They know the federal process. They do federal NEPA documents as they do their master plans and then spin off projects from those master plans. So I think airports are covered by the fact that they are typically not seeking state dollars. They're seeking federal dollars. But an awful lot of road work, particularly at the local government level, gets done with non-federal money, especially today. There's just communities are doing things. They look at the pace of federal projects, how much money we get each year, and they say, you know, that's a long wait. So they do it another way. And right now, under stimulus, those communities have been put at disadvantage. Congressional rules say we can't bend the rules. We have to follow NEPA.
I don't want to extend the debate for too long, but I mean, there are transit projects that cities have that use federal dollars, and so those dollars, they are used to using federal dollars for some of their projects, and transit is a good example.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes, and there are some, a handful of transit projects that are on our universe of possible projects.
Mr. Robinson, if we could just switch gears just a little bit. We talked about, spent a lot of time on the subject in front of us today, the STIP and the stimulus. Touched a little bit on the FY10 capital budget and how it integrates with the stimulus, but also we have a bond package that we had appropriated for or authorized last year. And could you just touch on, if you know how DOT plans on dealing with those, or is it a question better left for the commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, we are going forward with our bond projects as we speak. We've been doing some design work. We've looked at using emergency bridge repair money that you provided through the bond funding for dealing with the three bridges on the Seward Highway that are in great need of repair. We are going forward. My understanding is Department of Revenue is selling or anticipates selling the bond or enough bonds to cover the first year's cash flow projections. So we've identified exactly what our cash flow needs are for the next 3 years on those projects. So we are moving forward with them.
Maybe you can get back with the committee on how you see those projects laying out and integrating with these other two bigger items, because we've got roughly, I think, a little over $1 billion here. That's what you're talking about on the next slide, $1.1 billion, and we've got a $2 billion FY10 capital budget as presented by the governor. And then we've got this bond package that we're working with. And we want to make sure we're looking at the entire picture here at the table as we work through this process the next couple months. So we'll be layering those in and out as we work through this.
If you're ready, Mr. Chairman,
yes, go ahead.
This last slide slide 25 talks about our workload. Now, of course, the numbers will come down somewhat with the final bill out of conference, but there is even with that reduction, it's still a significant addition to workload on DOT and contracting community. I just want you to, I mean, one way to think of this, we're sort of right now operating both in design groups and in the planning groups on what I call a sprint-like pace. And the problem is we're in a marathon. It's going to go on for some time, and it's going to be hard on people. It's already hard on my staff. I can't tell you how many of my people are working past midnight on a routine basis. So I finally was able to give them a few days off because we got the stip out yesterday and let them go reacquaint themselves with their families, but it's happening all over.
Mm-hmm. You have any, I think that's your last slide, Mr. Otisman?
That's my last slide, other than just we have, some comments slide.
Yeah. Well, and we do appreciate the staff putting in extra time, and we're willing to work with the administration and DOT to make sure we get all our federal largesse that we're due here for our capital. We'll work together with you. Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I assume, Jeff, that DOT continues to have significant vacancies. Has the administration made any special accommodation for you based on the work pace in regards to a hiring freeze?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, we have been submitting waiver requests to the chief of staff to specifically build back up, to fill some of those positions that we have that are vacant, that are dedicated towards the design and construction of our federal programs. So engineering positions are a bit difficult to fill, and some of them have been vacant quite a while, but we are continuing to pursue getting those positions filled.
Senator Huggins.
Yeah, and in that light, how many of your waivers have been approved?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, I believe that we got a blanket exemption to deal with recalling our seasonal positions. That's a lot of their, we have construction positions that are seasonal in nature and that we put in layoff status or leave without pay when we don't need them and then need to recall. We have an exemption to bring those people back, which has helped us a great deal. We've also received, there was about three other positions I request that we've submitted that we've had approved. As far as I know, I can recall, we have not had any denied at this time.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And what, roughly the percentage of these projects are gonna need legislative approval that you see coming at you, and how much involvement are you gonna need or request from this committee and the legislature?
I'm gonna take a guess at that. Mr.
Chairman, my expectation is all but three or four of them will either need partial or full legislative appropriation through a supplemental. It's just a handful that don't.
Okay.
If I can just put in one little plug, I know the STIP and all the federal rules are very arcane and very difficult to understand. At 12 o'clock today, in House Transportation, for anyone interested, there is a class being put on by one of my staff on STIP 101. So mm-hmm. That's how your lunch hour wants to be spent. There it is,
Senator Huggins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, just a bit of positive feedback for DOT, particularly Frank Richards. I was talking to Governor Sheffield this morning about docks and shipping and things of that nature in and about the Port of Anchorage, and he went out of his way to compliment Frank Richards in the job he did over the last couple of days back in D.C. So pass on an attaboy to Frank from both myself and Governor Sheffield.
Mr. Chairman, I just one more plug that I'd like to put in there, and that is we do have a web page, a link on our home page that you'll see this particular logo on our homepage, and it'll take you to an economic stimulus projects page that provides information that we have as current as it can be on economic stimulus and the fact sheets and links to other web pages that Federal Highways has, ASHTO, that type of thing. So if you're looking for more information, then we have it.
I don't think the road to Nome, the proposal to Nome, is in the current STIPS. Is it going to appear in the rewrite along with the road out of Prudhoe Bay?
Mr. Chairman, it's premature to answer that with any finality, but right now it's undergoing kind of what we'd call pre-NEPA level of work. The kind of a recon study, a review of all the past studies, that sort of thing. The STIP rules are pretty demanding. We have to show that if we have a project in the STIP, including a design start, that we have a credible plan for how we're going to pay for the project. And so that will be the hurdle we have to get over, at least with federal funds on that project.
I think we'll go to Senator Olson. I think you had a question. We'll go to Senator Olson. I'm sure he's got a question dealing with this issue.
Mr. Otteson, yesterday my office was inundated with a fair amount of challenges related to the Gamble evacuation road that's been on the STIP for a number of 10 or 20 years there. I guess, is that road eligible for the stimulus package financing that's coming through, or what is the status of trying to get that underway?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, yes, it would be one of the eligible projects for the slow list. I'll have to see whether it would make the new 12-month deadline as opposed to the 18-month deadline. That would be one thing I have to check on.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson?
Just a comment. I appreciate the overview because, I mean, this is a very important topic, and thanks to both of you for helping out with it. And I especially appreciate the work that a lot of your people are going through. I mean, we understand it as a concept. For them, it's a reality. So express our thanks to them. And then finally, getting back to the STIP plan and the process that you go through, I especially am gratified that you mentioned that it is an open and transparent process and open to the public when these kind of scoring criteria are applied. So it would just be helpful if you'd notify us anyway when you're doing scoring on Juno projects, because it would be interesting to have some Juno folks there. If you could just give us a heads up.
If I could just comment, Mr. Chair, Senator Elton, we will have, I believe the scoring will take place for the next round before session is over. I think we're going to try to hold that meeting in Juno.
Okay.
So, I think you'll find that your eyes will glaze over after the first hour, but the first hour will be interesting.
We promise we'll open our eyes when you get to local projects. Thank you, Mr.
We do that quite a bit at this table. It's one of the things we do, even though some folks in administration feel it's a very mysterious process. It's a very open process with a lot of discussion. And the projects come out of the local level, venting through the councils and the assemblies across the state. So we're very comfortable in that process. We'll see if we can't have some staff there to help facilitate that process with the communication with the public and then to this committee. Any other questions? Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Not necessarily a question, it's a comment. As the Truckers Association and the AGC was in town this week, I had the opportunity to talk to not only contractors and trucking outfits that do business through and in and around the interior, but throughout the state. And I was assured by them that their capacity, their contractors' capacity, is definitely there for work to come forward, because they talked about some bids on some jobs where they were small jobs, $200,000-$300,000 jobs. They had 19 bidders. Some of the bidders were bidders that are multi-million-dollar contractors that generally do not fool around with jobs of that size. So I think we have plenty of capacity to take care of the work and plenty of need. So, and I realize your comment was not to these particular projects. You were looking more to the future if we did not plan Hall Road and other infrastructure projects related to that. But there's a need now, and so I'm sure that they would be more than willing, and you'll have a huge list of bidders on any of these projects as soon as they come out.
So we're anxiously looking forward to the STIP, original STIP list in spreadsheet format, the amendments, and then the new list, so we can, and also the projects that, you know, are not going to make it. I think you said there was three or six or some other number. So we'll anxiously await those, and then we'll work with DOT as we go through this process so we can get what we need to get done. Tuesday will be our next meeting. Start at 9 a.m. That's Tuesday. There will be no meeting tomorrow, no meeting Monday. On Tuesday morning, we are going to have an overview of the FY10 budget by Ledge Finance. And I would like to thank DOT's representatives today coming before the committee and starting the process in a timely fashion one day after the conference committee took action in Washington. So we are not going to let any grass grow under our feet here, and we'll move right along. With that, this meeting's adjourned.